This is Audible.
Penguin Audio presents Guilty Pleasures by Laurel K. Hamilton. Read by Kimberly Alexis. Chapter 1. Willie McCoy had been a jerk before he died. His being dead didn't change that. He sat across from me wearing a loud plaid sport jacket. The polyester pants were primary Crayola green. His short black hair was slicked back from a thin triangular face. He had always reminded me of a bit player in a gangster movie. The kind that sells information, runs errands, and is expendable. Of course, now that Willie was a vampire, the expendable part didn't count anymore. But he was still selling information and running errands. No, death hadn't changed him much. But just in case, I avoided looking directly into his eyes. It was standard policy for dealing with vampires. He was a slime bucket, but now he was an undead slime bucket. It was a new category for me. We sat in the quiet, air-conditioned hush of my office. The powder-blue walls, which Bert, my boss, thought would be soothing, made the room feel cold.
"Mind if I smoke?"
he asked. "Yes," I said, "I do."
"Damn. You aren't gonna make this easy, are you?"
I looked directly at him for a moment. His eyes were still brown. He caught me looking, and I looked down at my desk. Willie laughed, a wheezing snicker of a sound. The laugh hadn't changed.
"Geez, I love it. You're afraid of me."
"Not afraid. Just cautious."
"You don't have to admit it. I can smell the fear on you, almost like something touching my face, my brain. You're afraid of me 'cause I'm a vampire."
I shrugged. What could I say? How do you lie to someone who can smell your fear? "Why are you here, Willie?"
"Geez, I wish I had a smoke."
The skin began to jump at the corner of his mouth. I didn't think vampires had nervous twitches. His hand went up, almost touched it. He smiled, flashing fangs.
"Some things don't change."
I wanted to ask him, what does change? How does it feel to be dead? I knew other vampires, but Willie was the first I had known before and after death. It was a peculiar feeling. "What do you want?"
"Hey, I'm here to give you money, to become a client."
I glanced up at him, avoiding his eyes. His tie tack caught the overhead lights. Real gold. Willie had never had anything like that before. He was doing all right for a dead man. "I raise the dead for a living, no pun intended. Why would a vampire need a zombie raised?" He shook his head, two quick jerks to either side.
"Nah, no voodoo stuff. I want to hire you to investigate some murders."
"I'm not a private investigator."
"But you got one of them on retainer to your outfit."
I nodded. "You could just hire Ms. Sims directly. You don't have to go through me for that." Again, that jerky head shake.
"But she don't know about vampires the way you do."
I sighed. "Can we cut to the chase here, Willie? I have to leave." I glanced at the wall clock. "In 15 minutes. I don't like to leave a client waiting alone in a cemetery. They tend to get jumpy." He laughed. I found the snickering laugh comforting, even with the fangs. Surely vampires should have rich, melodious laughs.
"I'll bet they do. I'll just bet they do."
His face sobered suddenly, as if a hand had wiped his laughter away. I felt fear like a jerk in the pit of my stomach. Vampires could change movements like clicking a switch. If he could do that, what else could he do?
"You know about the vampires that are getting wasted over in the district?"
He made it a question, so I answered. "I'm familiar with them." 4 vampires had been slaughtered in the new vampire club district. Their hearts had been torn out, their heads cut off.
"You still working with the cops?"
"I am still on retainer with the new task force." He laughed again.
"Yeah, the spook squad. Under-budgeted and undermanned, right?"
"You've described most of the police work in this town."
"Maybe, but the cops feel like you do, Anita. What's one more dead vampire? New laws don't change that.
It had only been 2 years since Addison v. Clark. The court case gave us a revised version of what life was and what death wasn't. Vampirism was legal in the good old U.S. of A. We were one of the few countries to acknowledge them. The immigration people were having fits trying to keep foreign vampires from immigrating in, well, flocks. All sorts of questions were being fought out in court. Did heirs have to give back their inheritance? Were you widowed if your spouse became undead? Was it murder to slay a vampire? There was even a movement to give them the vote. Times were a-changing. I stared at the vampire in front of me and shrugged. Did I really believe what was one more dead vampire? Maybe. If you believe I feel that way, why come to me at all?
Because you're the best at what you do. We need the best.
It was the first time he had said, we. Who are you working for, Willie? He smiled then, a close, secretive smile, like he knew something I should know.
Never you mind that. Money's real good. We want somebody who knows the nightlife to be looking into these murders.
I've seen the bodies, Willie. I gave my opinions to the police.
What'd you think?
He leaned forward in the chair, small hands flat on my desk. His fingernails were pale, almost white, bloodless. I gave a full report to the police. I stared up at him, almost looking him in the eye.
Won't even give me that, will you?
I am not at liberty to discuss police business with you.
I told him you wouldn't go for this.
Go for what? You haven't told me a damn thing.
We want you to investigate the vampire killings, find out who's or what's doing it. We'll pay you 3 times your normal fee.
I shook my head. That explained why Bert, the greedy son of a gun, had set up this meeting. He knew how I felt about vampires, but my contract forced me to at least meet with any client that had given Bert a retainer. My boss would do anything for money. Problem was, he thought I should too. Bert and I would be having a talk very soon. I stood. The police are looking into it. I'm already giving them all the help I can. In a way, I'm already working on the case. Save your money. He sat staring up at me very still. It was not that lifeless immobility of the long dead, but it was a shadow of it. Fear ran up my spine and into my throat. I fought an urge to draw my crucifix out of my shirt and drive him from my office. Somehow throwing a client out using a holy item seemed less than professional. So I just stood there, waiting for him to move.
Why won't you help us?
I have clients to meet, Willie. I'm sorry that I can't help you.
Won't help, you mean?
I nodded. Have it your way. I walked around the desk to show him to the door. He moved with a liquid quickness that Willie had never had, but I saw him move and was one step back from his reaching hand. I'm not just another pretty face to fall for mind tricks.
You saw me move.
I heard you move. You're the new dead, Willie. Vampire or not, you've got a lot to learn. He was frowning at me, hand still half extended towards me.
Maybe, but no human could have stepped out of reach like that.
He stepped up close to me, plaid jacket nearly brushing against me. Pressed together like that, we were nearly the same height. Short. His eyes were on a perfect level with mine. I stared as hard as I could at his shoulder. It took everything I had not to step back from him. But damn it, undead or not, he was Willie McCoy. I wasn't going to give him the satisfaction. He said,
"You ain't human any more than I am."
I moved to open the door. I hadn't stepped away from him. I had stepped away to open the door. I tried convincing the sweat along my spine that there was a difference. The cold feeling in my stomach wasn't fooled either. I really have to be going now. Thank you for thinking of Animators, Inc. I gave him my best professional smile. Empty of meaning as a light bulb, but dazzling. He paused in the open doorway.
Why won't you work for us? I gotta tell him something when I go back.
I wasn't sure, but there was something like fear in his voice. Would he get in trouble for failing? I felt sorry for him and knew it was stupid. He was the undead, for heaven's sake, but he stood looking at me, and he was still Willie with his funny coats and small, nervous hands. Tell them, whoever they are, that I don't work for vampires.
A firm rule?
Again, he made it sound like a question.
Concrete.
There was a flash of something on his face, the old Willie peeking through. It was almost pity.
I wish you hadn't said that, Anita. These people don't like anybody telling them no.
I think you've overstayed your welcome. I don't like to be threatened.
It ain't a threat, Anita. It's the truth.
He straightened his tie, fondling the new gold tie tack, squared his thin shoulders and walked out. I closed the door behind him and leaned against it. My knees felt weak. But there wasn't time for me to sit here and shake. Mrs. Grundick was probably already at the cemetery.
She would be standing there with her little black purse and her grown sons, waiting for me to raise her husband from the dead.
There was a mystery of two very different wills. It was either years of court costs and arguments, or raise Albert Grundick from the dead and ask. Everything I needed was in my car, even the chickens. I drew the silver crucifix free of my blouse and let it hang in full view. I have several guns, and I know how to use them. I keep a 9mm Browning high power in my desk. The gun weighed a little over 2 pounds, silver-plated bullets and all. Silver won't kill a vampire, but it can discourage them. It forces them to have to heal the wounds, almost human slow. I wiped my sweaty palms on my skirt and went out. Craig, our night secretary, was typing furiously at the computer keyboard. His eyes widened as I walked over the thick carpeting. Maybe it was the cross swinging on its long chain. Maybe it was the shoulder rig tight across my back and the gun out in plain sight. He didn't mention either. Smart man. I put my nice little corduroy jacket over it all. The jacket didn't lie flat over the gun, but that was okay. I doubted the Grundicks and their lawyers would notice.
Chapter 2.
I had gotten to see the sunrise as I drove home that morning. I hate sunrises. They mean I've overscheduled myself and worked all bloody night. St. Louis has more trees edging its highways than any other city I've driven through. I could almost admit the trees looked nice in the first light of dawn. Almost. My apartment always looks depressingly white and cheerful in morning sunlight. The walls are the same vanilla ice cream white as every apartment I've ever seen. The carpeting is a nice shade of gray, preferable to that dog poop brown that is more common. The apartment is a roomy one-bedroom. I'm told it has a nice view of the park next door. You couldn't prove it by me. If I had my choice, there'd be no windows. I get by with heavy drapes that turn the brightest day to cool twilight. I switch the radio on low to drown the small noises of my day-living neighbors. Sleep sucked me under to the soft music of Chopin. A minute later, the phone rang. I lay there for a minute, cursing myself for forgetting to turn on the answering machine. Maybe if I ignored it? 5 rings later, I gave in. Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I wake you?
It was a woman I didn't know. If it was a salesperson, I was going to become violent.
Who is this?
I blinked at the bedside clock. It was 8. I'd had nearly 2 hours of sleep. Yippee!
I'm Monica Vespucci.
She said it like it should explain everything. It didn't.
Yes?
I tried to sound helpful, encouraging. I think it came out as a growl.
Oh my, I'm the Monica that works with Catherine Mazin?
I huddled around the receiver and tried to think. I don't think really well on 2 hours of sleep. Catherine was a good friend, a name I knew. She had probably mentioned this woman to me, but for the life of me, I couldn't place her.
Sure, Monica, yeah. What do you want?
It sounded rude, even to me.
I'm sorry if I don't sound too good. I got off work at 6. My God, you mean you've only had 2 hours of sleep? Do you want to shoot me or what?
I didn't answer the question. I'm not that rude.
Did you want something, Monica? Sure, yes. I'm throwing a surprise bachelorette party for Catherine. You know she gets married next month.
I nodded, remembered she couldn't see me, and mumbled, I'm in the wedding.
Oh, sure, I knew that. Pretty dresses for the bridesmaids, don't you think?
Actually, the last thing I wanted to spend $120 on was a long pink formal with puffy sleeves.
but it was Catherine's wedding.
What about the bachelorette party?
Oh, I'm rambling, aren't I? And you, just desperate for sleep.
I wondered if screaming at her would make her go away any faster. Nah, she'd probably cry.
What do you want, please, Monica?
Well, I know it's short notice, but everything just sort of slipped up on me. I meant to call you a week ago, but I just never got around to it.
This I believed. Go on.
The bachelorette party is tonight. Catherine says you don't drink, so I was wondering if you could be the designated driver.
I just lay there for a minute, wondering how mad to get and if it would do me any good. Maybe if I'd been more awake, I wouldn't have said what I was thinking. Don't you think this is awfully short notice since you want me to drive?
I know, I'm so sorry. I'm just so scattered lately. Catherine told me you usually have either Friday or Saturday night off. Is Friday not your night off this week?
As a matter of fact, it was, but I didn't really want to give up my only night off to this airhead on the other end of the phone. I do have the night off.
Great! I'll give you directions and you can pick us up after work. Is that okay?
It wasn't, but what else could I say? That's fine.
Pencil and paper?
You said you worked with Catherine, right? I was actually beginning to remember Monica.
Why, yes.
I know where Catherine works. I don't need directions.
Oh, how silly of me. Of course. Then we'll see you about 5. Dress up, but no heels. We may be dancing tonight.
I hate to dance.
Sure.
See you then.
See you tonight.
The phone went dead in my ear. I turned on the answering machine and cuddled back under the sheets. Monica worked with Catherine. That made her a lawyer. That was a frightening thought. Maybe she was one of those people who was only organized at work. No. It occurred to me then, when it was too late, that I could just have refused the invitation. Damn. I was quick today. Oh, well. How bad could it be, watching strangers get blitzed out of their minds? If I was lucky, maybe someone would throw up in my car. I had the strangest dreams once I got back to sleep. All about this woman I didn't know, a coconut cream pie, and Willie McCoy's funeral.
Chapter 3. Monica Vespucci was wearing a button that said, "Vampires are people too." It was not a promising beginning to the evening. Her white blouse was silk with a high, flared collar framing a dark health club tan. Her hair was short and expertly cut, her makeup perfect. The button should have tipped me off to what kind of bachelorette party she'd planned. Some days I'm just slow to catch on. I was wearing black jeans, knee-high boots, and a crimson blouse. My hair was made to order for the outfit, black curling just over the shoulders of the red blouse. The solid, nearly black brown of my eyes matches the hair. Only the skin stands out, too pale, Germanic against the Latin darkness. A very ex-boyfriend once described me as a little China doll. He meant it as a compliment. I didn't take it that way. There are reasons why I don't date much. The blouse was long-sleeved to hide the knife sheath on my right wrist and the scars on my left arm. I had left my gun locked in the trunk of my car. I didn't think the bachelorette party would get that out of hand.
I'm so sorry that I put off planning this to the last minute, Catherine. That's why there's only 3 of us. Everybody else had plans, Monica said. Imagine that. People having plans for Friday night, I said.
Monica stared at me as if trying to decide whether I was joking or not. Catherine gave me a warning glare. I gave them both my best angelic smile. Monica smiled back. Catherine wasn't fooled. Monica began dancing down the sidewalk, happy as a drunken clam. She had had only 2 drinks with dinner. It was a bad sign.
Be nice,
Catherine whispered. What did I say?
Anita.
Her voice sounded like my father's used to sound when I'd stayed out too late. I sighed. You're just no fun tonight. I plan to be a lot of fun tonight. She stretched her arms skyward. She still wore the crumpled remains of her business suit. The wind blew her long, copper-colored hair. I've never been able to decide if Catherine would be prettier if she cut her hair, so you'd notice the face first, or if the hair was what made her pretty.
If I have to give up one of my few free nights, then I am going to enjoy myself immensely, she said.
There was a kind of fierceness to the last word. I stared up at her. You're not planning to get falling down drunk, are you?
Maybe.
She looked smug. Catherine knew I didn't approve of, or rather didn't understand, drinking. I didn't like having my inhibitions lowered. If I was going to cut loose, I wanted to be in control of just how loose I got. We had left my car in a parking lot 2 blocks back, the one with the wrought iron fence around it. There wasn't much parking down by the river. The narrow brick roads and ancient sidewalks had been designed for horses, not automobiles. The streets had been fresh washed by a summer thunderstorm that had come and gone while we ate dinner. The first stars glittered overhead, like diamonds trapped in velvet. Monica yelled,
"Hurry up, slowpokes!"
Catherine looked at me and grinned. The next thing I knew, she was running toward Monica. "Oh, for heaven's sake," I muttered. Maybe if I'd had drinks with dinner, I'd have run too, but I doubted it.
"Don't be an old stick in the mud," Catherine called back.
Stick in the mud? I caught up to them walking. Monica was giggling. Somehow I had known she would be. Catherine and she were leaning against each other laughing. I suspected they might be laughing at me. Monica calmed enough to fake an ominous stage whisper.
"Do you know what lies around this corner?"
As a matter of fact, I did. The last vampire killing had been only 4 blocks from here. We were in what the vampires called the District. Humans called it the Riverfront, or Blood Square, depending on if they were being rude or not. "Guilty pleasures," I said.
"Oh, pooh, you spoiled the surprise."
"What's guilty pleasures?" Catherine asked. Monica giggled.
"Oh, goody, the surprise isn't spoiled after all."
She put her arm through Catherine's.
"You are going to love this, I promise you."
Maybe Catherine would. I knew I wouldn't, but I followed them around the corner anyway. The sign was a wonderful swirling neon the color of heart blood. The symbolism was not lost on me. We went up 3 broad steps, and there was a vampire standing in front of the propped open door. He had a black crew cut and small, pale eyes. His massive shoulders threatened to rip the tight black t-shirt he wore. Wasn't pumping iron redundant after you died? Even standing on the threshold, I could hear the busy hum of voices, laughter, music. That rich, murmurous sound of many people in a small space, determined to have a good time. The vampire stood beside the door, very still. There was still a movement to him, an aliveness, for lack of a better term. He couldn't have been dead more than 20 years, if that. In the dark, he looked almost human, even to me. He had fed already tonight. His skin was flushed and healthy. He looked damn near rosy-cheeked. A meal of fresh blood will do that to you. Monica squeezed his arm.
"Ooh, feel that muscle."
He grinned, flashing fangs. Catherine gasped. He grinned wider.
"Buzz here is an old friend, aren't you, Buzz?"
"Buzz? The vampire? Surely not." But he nodded. "Go on in, Monica. Your table is waiting." Table? What kind of clout did Monica have? Guilty Pleasures was one of the hottest clubs in the district, and they did not take reservations. There was a large sign on the door. No crosses, crucifixes, or other holy items allowed inside. I read the sign and walked past it. I had no intention of getting rid of my cross. A rich, melodious voice floated around us.
"Anita, how good of you to come."
The voice belonged to Jean-Claude, club owner and master vampire. He looked like a vampire was supposed to look. Softly curling hair tangled with the high white lace of an antique shirt. Lace spilled over pale, long-fingered hands. The shirt hung open, giving a glimpse of lean, bare chest framed by more frothy lace. Most men couldn't have worn a shirt like that. The vampire made it seem utterly masculine.
"You two know each other?"
Monica sounded surprised.
"Oh, yes," Jean-Claude said. "Miss Blake and I have met before.
I've been helping the police work cases on the riverfront.
She is their vampire expert.
He made the last words soft and warm and vaguely obscene. Monica giggled. Catherine was staring at Jean-Claude, eyes wide and innocent. I touched her arm and she jerked as if waking from a dream. I didn't bother to whisper because I knew he would have heard me anyway.
Important safety tip? Never look a vampire in the eye.
She nodded. The first hint of fear showed in her face.
I would never harm such a lovely young woman.
He took Catherine's hand and raised it to his mouth, a mere brush of lips. Catherine blushed. He kissed Monica's hand as well. He looked at me and laughed.
Do not worry, my little animator. I will not touch you. That would be cheating.
He moved to stand next to me. I stared fixedly at his chest. There was a burn scar almost hidden in the lace. The burn was in the shape of a cross. How many decades ago had someone shoved a cross into his flesh?
Just as you having a cross would be an unfair advantage.
What could I say? In a way, he was right. It was a shame that it wasn't merely the shape of a cross that hurt a vampire. Jean-Claude would have been in deep shit. Unfortunately, the cross had to be blessed and backed up by faith. An atheist waving a cross at a vampire was a truly pitiful sight. He breathed my name like a whisper against my skin.
Anita, what are you thinking?
The voice was so damn soothing. I wanted to look up and see what face went with such words. Jean-Claude had been intrigued by my partial immunity to him. That and the cross-shaped burn scar on my arm. He found the scar amusing. Every time we met, he did his best to bespell me, and I did my best to ignore him. I had won, up until now.
You never objected to me carrying a cross before.
You were on police business then. Now you are not.
I stared at his chest and wondered if the lace was as soft as it looked. Probably not.
Are you so insecure in your own powers, little animator? Do you believe that all your resistance to me resides in that piece of silver around your neck?
I didn't believe that, but I knew it helped. Jean-Claude was a self-admitted 205 years old. A vampire gains a lot of power in 2 centuries. He was suggesting I was a coward. I was not. I reached up to unfasten the chain. He stepped away from me and turned his back. The cross spilled silver into my hands. A blonde human woman appeared beside me. She handed me a check stub and took the cross. Nice. A holy item check girl. I felt suddenly underdressed without my cross. I slept and showered in it. Jean-Claude stepped close again.
You will not resist the show tonight, Anita. Someone will enthrall you.
No, I said. But it's hard to be tough when you're staring at someone's chest. You really need eye contact to play tough, but that was a no-no. He laughed. The sound seemed to rub over my skin like the brush of fur, warm and feeling ever so slightly of death. Monica grabbed my arm.
You're going to love this, I promise you.
Yes, Jean-Claude said. It will be a night you will never forget.
Is that a threat? He laughed again, that warm, awful sound.
This is a place of pleasure, Anita, not violence.
Monica was pulling at my arm.
Hurry! The entertainment's about to begin.
Entertainment? Catherine asked. I had to smile. Welcome to the world's only vampire strip club, Catherine. You are joking. Scout's honor. I glanced back at the door. I don't know why. Jean-Claude stood utterly still, no sense of anything, as if he were not there at all. Then he moved, one pale hand raised to his lips. He blew me a kiss across the room. The night's entertainment had begun. Chapter 4. Our table was nearly bumping up against the stage. The room was full of liquor and laughter, and a few faked screams as the vampire waiters moved around the tables. There was an undercurrent of fear, that peculiar terror that you get on roller coasters and at horror movies. safe terror. The lights went out. Screams echoed through the room, high and shrill. Real fear for an instant. Jean-Claude's voice came out of the darkness.
Welcome to Guilty Pleasures. We are here to serve you. To make your most evil thought come true.
His voice was silken whispers in the small hours of night. Damn, he was good.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to feel my breath upon your skin? My lips along your neck? The hard brush of teeth? The sweet, sharp pain of fangs? Your heart beating frantically against my chest? Your blood flowing into my veins? Sharing yourself? Giving me life? Knowing that I truly could not live without you. All of you.
Perhaps it was the intimacy of darkness. Whatever, I felt as if his voice was speaking just for me. To me. I was his chosen, his special one. No, that wasn't right. Every woman in the club felt the same. We were all his chosen. And perhaps there was more truth in that than in anything else.
Our first gentleman tonight shares your fantasy. He wanted to know how the sweetest of kisses would feel. He has gone before you to tell you that it is wondrous.
He let silence fill the darkness until my own heartbeat sounded loud.
Philip is with us tonight.
Monica whispered.
Philip!
A collective gasp ran through the audience, then a soft chanting began.
Philip, Philip.
The sound rose around us in the dark like a prayer. The lights began to come up like at the end of a movie. A figure stood in the center of the stage. A white t-shirt hugged his upper body. Not a muscle man, but well built. Not too much of a good thing. A black leather jacket, tight jeans, and boots completed the outfit. He could have walked off any street. His thick brown hair was long enough to sweep his shoulders. Music drifted into the twilight silence. The man swayed to the sounds, hips rotating ever so slightly. He began to slip out of the leather jacket, moving almost in slow motion. The soft music began to have a pulse. A pulse that his body moved with, swaying. The jacket slid to the stage. He stared out at the audience for a minute, letting us see what there was to see. Scars hugged the bend of each arm, until the skin had formed white mounds of scar tissue. I swallowed hard. I wasn't sure what was about to happen, but I was betting I wasn't gonna like it. He swept back his long hair from his face with both hands. He swayed and strutted around the edge of the stage. He stood near our table looking down at us. His neck looked like a junkie's arm. I had to look away. All those neat little bite marks, neat little scars. I glanced up and found Catherine staring at her lap. Monica was leaning forward in her chair, lips half-parted. He grabbed the t-shirt with strong hands and pulled. It peeled away from his chest, ripping. Screams from the audience, a few of them called his name. He smiled. The smile was dazzling, brilliant, melt-in-your-mouth sexy. There was scar tissue on his smooth, bare chest. White scars, pinkish scars. New scars, old scars. I just sat staring with my mouth open. Catherine whispered,
"Dear God."
"He's wonderful, isn't he?"
Monica asked. I glanced at her. Her flared collar had slipped, exposing two neat puncture wounds, fairly old, almost scars. Sweet Jesus. The music burst into a pulsing violence. He danced, swaying, gyrating, throwing the strength of his body into every move. There was a white mass of scars over his left collarbone, ragged and vicious. My stomach tightened. A vampire had torn through his collarbone, ripped at him like a dog with a piece of meat. I knew because I had a similar scar. I had a lot of similar scars. Dollar bills appeared in hands like mushrooms after a rain. Monica was waving her money like a flag. I didn't want Philip at our table. I had to lean into Monica to be heard over the noise. "Monica, please, don't bring him over here." Even as she turned to look at me, I knew it was too late. Philip of the Many Scars was standing on the stage looking down at us. I stared up into his very human eyes. I could see the pulse in Monica's throat. She licked her lips. Her eyes were enormous. She stuffed the money down the front of his pants. Her hands traced his scars like nervous butterflies. She leaned her face close to his stomach and began kissing his scars, leaving red lipstick prints behind. He knelt as she kissed him, forcing her mouth higher and higher up his chest. He knelt, and she pressed lips to his face. He brushed his hair back from his neck as if he knew what she wanted. She licked the newest bite scar, tongue small and pink like a cat. I heard her breath go out in a trembling sigh. She bit him, mouth locking over the wound. Philip jerked with pain or just surprise. Her jaws tightened, her throat worked. She was sucking the wound. I looked across the table at Catherine. She was staring at them, face blank with astonishment. The crowd was going wild, screaming and waving money. Philip pulled away from Monica and moved on to another table. Monica slumped forward, head collapsing into her lap, arms limp at her side. Had she fainted? I reached out to touch her shoulder and realized I didn't want to touch her. I gripped her shoulder gently. She moved, turning her head to look at me. Her eyes held that lazy fullness that sex gives. Her mouth looked pale with most of the lipstick worn away. She hadn't fainted. She was basking in the afterglow. I drew back from her, rubbing my hand against my jeans. My palms were sweating. Philip was back on the stage. He had stopped dancing. He was just standing there. Monica had left a small, round mark on his neck. I felt the first stirrings of an old mind flowing over the crowd. Catherine asked, "What's happening?"
"It's all right," Monica said.
She was sitting upright in her chair, eyes still half closed. She licked her lips and stretched, hands over her head. Catherine turned to me.
"Anita, what is it?"
"Vampire," I said.
Fear flashed on her face, but it didn't last. I watched the fear fade under the weight of the vampire's mind. She turned slowly to stare at Philip as he waited on the stage. Catherine was in no danger. This mass hypnosis was not personal and not permanent. The vampire wasn't as old as Jean-Claude, nor as good. I sat there feeling the press and flow of over 100 years of power, and it wasn't enough. I felt him move up through the tables. He had gone to a lot of trouble to make sure the poor humans wouldn't see him come. He would simply appear in their midst, like magic. You don't get to surprise vampires often. I turned to watch the vampire walk toward the stage. Every human face I saw was enraptured, turned blindly to the stage, waiting. The vampire was tall with high cheekbones, model perfect, sculpted. He was too masculine to be beautiful, and too perfect to be real. He strode through the tables wearing a proverbial vampire outfit, black tux and white gloves. He stopped one table away from me to stare. He held the audience in the palm of his mind, helpless and waiting. But there I sat staring at him, though not at his eyes. His body stiffened, surprised. There's nothing like ruining the calm of 100-year-old vampire to boost a girl's morale. I looked past him to see Jean-Claude. He was staring at me. I saluted him with my drink. He acknowledged it with a nod of his head. The tall vampire was standing beside Philip. Philip's eyes were as blank as any human's. The spell, or whatever, drifted away. With a thought, he awoke the audience, and they gasped.
"Magic!"
Jean-Claude's voice filled the sudden silence.
"This is Robert. Welcome him to our stage."
The crowd went wild, applauding and screaming. Catherine was applauding along with everyone else. Apparently she was impressed. The music changed again, pulsing and throbbing in the air, almost painfully loud. Robert the vampire began to dance. He moved with a careful violence, pumping to the music. He threw his white gloves into the audience. One landed at my feet. I left it there. Monica said,
"Pick it up." I shook my head. Another woman leaned over from another table. Her breath smelled like whiskey.
You don't want it?
I shook my head. She got up, I suppose, to get the glove. Monica beat her to it. The woman sat down, looking unhappy. The vampire had stripped, showing a smooth expanse of chest. He dropped to the stage and did fingertip push-ups. The audience went wild. I wasn't impressed. I knew he could bench-press a car if he wanted to. What's a few push-ups compared to that? He began to dance around Philip. Philip turned to face him, arms outspread, slightly crouched, as if he were ready for an attack. They began circling each other. The music softened until it was only a soft underscoring to the movements on stage. The vampire began to move closer to Philip. Philip moved as if trying to run from the stage. The vampire was suddenly there, blocking his escape. I hadn't seen him move. The vampire had just appeared in front of the man. I hadn't seen him move. Fear drove all the air from my body in an icy rush. I hadn't felt the mind trick, but it had happened. Jean-Claude was standing only two tables away. He raised one pale hand in a salute to me. The bastard had been in my mind and I hadn't known it. The audience gasped, and I looked back to the stage. They were both kneeling. The vampire had one of Philip's arms pinned behind his back. One hand gripped Philip's long hair, pulling his neck back at a painful angle. Philip's eyes were wide and terrified. The vampire hadn't put him under. He wasn't under. He was aware and scared. Dear God. He was panting, his chest rising and falling in short gasps. The vampire looked out at the audience and hissed, fangs flashing in the lights. The hiss turned the beautiful face to something bestial. His hunger rode out over the crowd, his need so intense it made my stomach cramp. No, I would not feel this with him. I dug fingernails into the palm of my hand and concentrated. The feeling faded. Pain helped. I opened my shaking fingers and found four half-moons that slowly filled with blood. The hunger beat around me, filling the crowd, but not me. Not me. I pressed a napkin to my hand and tried to look inconspicuous. The vampire drew back his head. No, I whispered. The vampire struck, teeth sinking into flesh. Philip shrieked, and it echoed in the club. The music died abruptly, no one moved. You could have dropped a pin. Soft, moist sucking sounds filled the silence. Philip began to moan, high in his throat. Over and over again, small, helpless sounds. I looked out at the crowd. They were with the vampire, feeling his hunger, his need, feeling him feed. Maybe sharing Philip's terror. I didn't know. I was apart from it and glad. The vampire stood, letting Philip fall to the stage, limp, unmoving. I stood without meaning to. The man's scarred back convulsed in a deep, shattering breath, as if he were fighting back from death. And maybe he was. He was alive. I sat back down, my knees felt weak. Sweat covered my palms and stung the cuts on my hand. He was alive, and he enjoyed it. I wouldn't have believed it if someone had told me. I would have called them a liar. A vampire junkie. Surely to God I'd seen everything now. Jean-Claude whispered,
"Who wants a kiss?"
No one moved for a heartbeat. Then hands holding money raised here and there. Not many, but a few. Most people looked confused, as if they had woken from a bad dream. Monica was holding money up. Philip lay where he had been dropped, chest rising and falling. Robert the vampire came to Monica. She tucked money down his pants. He pressed his bloody, fanged mouth to her lips. The kiss was long and deep, full of probing tongues. They were tasting each other. The vampire drew away from Monica. Her hands at his neck tried to draw him back, but he pulled away. He turned to me. I shook my head and showed him empty hands. No money here, folks. He grabbed for me, snake quick. No time to think. My chair crashed to the floor. I was standing, just out of reach. No ordinary human could have seen him coming. The jig, as they say, was up. A buzz of voices raised through the audience as they tried to figure out what had happened. Just your friendly neighborhood animator, folks. Nothing to get excited about. The vampire was still staring at me.
Jean-Claude was suddenly beside me, and I hadn't seen him come.
Are you all right, Anita?
His voice held things that the words didn't even hint at. Promises whispered in darkened rooms under cool sheets. He sucked me under, rolled my mind like a wino after money, and it felt good. Crash! Shrill noise thundered through my mind, chased the vampire out, held him at bay. My beeper had gone off. I blinked and staggered against our table. He reached out to steady me. "Don't touch me," I said. He smiled.
"Of course."
I pushed the button on my beeper to silence it. Thank you, God, that I hung the beeper on my waistband instead of stuffing it in a purse. I might never have heard it otherwise. I called from the phone at the bar. The police wanted my expertise at the Hillcrest Cemetery. I had to work on my night off.
Yippee!
And I meant it. I offered to take Catherine with me, but she wanted to stay. Whatever else you can say about vampires, they are fascinating. It went with the job description, like drinking blood and working nights. It was her choice. I promised to come back in time to drive them home. Then I picked up my cross from the holy item check girl and slipped it inside my shirt. Jean-Claude was standing by the door. He said,
"I almost had you, my little animator."
I glanced at his face and quickly down. "Almost doesn't count, you blood-sucking bastard." Jean-Claude threw back his head and laughed. His laughter followed me out into the night, like velvet rubbing along my spine.
Chapter 5. The coffin lay on its side. A white scar of claw marks ran down the dark varnish. The pale blue lining, imitation silk, was sliced and gouged. One bloody handprint showed plainly. It could almost have been human. All that was left of the older corpse was a shredded brown suit, a finger bone gnawed clean, and a scrap of scalp. The man had been blonde. A second body lay perhaps 5 feet away. The man's clothes were shredded. His chest had been ripped open, ribs cracked like eggshells. Most of his internal organs were gone, leaving his body cavity like a hollowed-out log. Only his face was untouched. Pale eyes stared impossibly wide up into the summer stars. I was glad it was dark. My night vision is good, but darkness steals color. All the blood was black. The man's body was lost in the shadows of the trees. I didn't have to see him unless I walked up to him. I had done that. I had measured the bite marks with my trusty tape measure. With my little plastic gloves, I had searched the corpse over looking for clues. There weren't any. I could do anything I wanted to the scene of the crime. It had already been videotaped and snapped from every possible angle. I was always the last expert called in. The ambulance was waiting to take the bodies away once I was finished. I was about finished. I knew what had killed the man. Ghouls. I had narrowed the search down to a particular kind of undead. Bully for me. The coroner could have told them that. I was beginning to sweat inside the coverall I had put on to protect my clothes. The coverall was originally for vampire stakings, but I had started using it at crime scenes. There were black stains at the knees and down the legs. There had been so much blood in the grass. Thank you, dear God, that I didn't have to see this in broad daylight. I don't know why seeing something like this in daylight makes it worse, but I'm more likely to dream about a daylight scene. The blood is always so red and brown and thick. Night softens it, makes it less real. I appreciated that. I unzipped the front of my coverall, letting it gape open around my clothes. The wind blew against me, amazingly cool. The air smelled of rain. Another thunderstorm was moving this way. The yellow police tape was wrapped around tree trunks, strung through bushes. One yellow loop went around the stone feet of an angel. The tape flapped and cracked in the growing wind. Sergeant Rudolph Storr lifted the tape and walked towards me. He was 6'8" and built like a wrestler. He had a brisk, striding walk. His close-cropped black hair left his ears bare. Dolph was the head of the newest task force, the Spook Squad. Officially, it was the Regional Preternatural Investigation Team, RPIT, pronounced Rip It. It handled all supernatural-related crime. It wasn't exactly a step up for his career. Willie McCoy had been right. The task force was a half-hearted effort to placate the press and the liberals. Dolph had pissed somebody off or he wouldn't have been here. But Dolph, being Dolph, was determined to do the best job he could. He was like a force of nature. He didn't yell. He was just there, and things got done because of it.
"Well," he said.
"That's Dolph, a man of many words." "It was a ghoul attack." "And?" I shrugged. "And there are no ghouls in this cemetery." He stared down at me, face carefully neutral. He was good at that. Didn't like to influence his people.
"You just said it was a ghoul attack."
"Yes, but they came from somewhere outside the cemetery."
"So?"
"I've never known of any ghouls to travel this far outside their own cemetery." I stared at him, trying to see if he understood what I was saying.
"Tell me about ghouls, Anita."
He had his trusty little notebook out, pen poised and ready. "This cemetery is still holy ground. Cemeteries that have ghoul infestations are usually very old, or have satanic or certain voodoo rites performed in them. The evil sort of uses up the blessing until the ground becomes unholy. Once that happens, ghouls either move in or rise from the graves. No one's sure exactly which."
"Wait, what do you mean that no one knows?"
"Basically." He shook his head, staring at the notes he'd made, frowning.
"Explain."
"Vampires are made by other vampires. Zombies are raised from the grave by an animator or voodoo priest. Ghouls, as far as we know, just crawl out of their graves on their own. There are theories that very evil people become ghouls. I don't buy that. There was a theory for a while that people bitten by a supernatural being, were-animal, vampire, whatever, would become a ghoul. But I've seen whole cemeteries emptied, every corpse a ghoul. No way they were all attacked by supernatural forces while alive."
"All right, we don't know where ghouls come from. What do we know?"
"Ghouls don't rot like zombies. They retain their form more like vampires. They are more than animal intelligent, but not by much. They are cowards and won't attack a person unless she is hurt or unconscious."
"They sure as hell attacked the groundskeeper."
"He could have been knocked unconscious somehow."
"How?"
"Someone would have had to knock him out."
"Is that likely?"
"No. Ghouls don't work with humans or any other undead. A zombie will obey orders. Vampires have their own thoughts. Ghouls are like pack animals, wolves maybe, but a lot more dangerous. They wouldn't be able to understand working with someone. If you're not a ghoul, you're either meat or something to hide from."
"Then what happened here?"
"Dolph, these ghouls traveled quite a distance to reach this cemetery. There isn't another one for miles. Ghouls don't travel like that. So maybe, just maybe, they attacked the caretaker when he came to scare them off. They should have run from him. Maybe they didn't."
"Could it be something or someone pretending to be ghouls?"
"Maybe, but I doubt it. Whoever it was, they ate that man. A human might do that, but a human couldn't tear the body apart like that. They just don't have the strength."
"Vampire?"
"Vampires don't eat meat."
"Zombies?"
"Maybe. There are rare cases where zombies go a little crazy and start attacking people. They seem to crave flesh. If they don't get it, they'll start to decay."
"I thought zombies always decayed."
"Flesh-eating zombies last a lot longer than normal. There's one case of a woman who is still human-looking after 3 years.
"They let her go around eating people?"
I smiled. "They feed her raw meat. I believe the article said lamb was preferred."
"Article?"
"Every career has its professional journal, Dolph."
"What's it called?"
I shrugged. "The Animator. What else?" He actually smiled.
"Okay. How likely is it that it's zombies?"
"Not very. Zombies don't run in packs unless they're ordered to."
"Even..."
He checked his notes.
"Flesh-eating zombies?"
"There have only been 3 documented cases. All of them were solitary hunters."
So, flesh-eating zombies or a new kind of ghoul? That sum it up?
I nodded. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Sorry to interrupt your night off.
He closed his notebook and looked at me. He was almost grinning.
The secretary said you were at a bachelorette party.
He wiggled his eyebrows.
Hoochie-coochie.
Don't give me a hard time, Dolph.
Wouldn't dream of it.
Right, I said. If you don't need me anymore, I'll be getting back.
We're finished, for now. Call me if you think of anything else.
Will do. I walked back to my car. The bloody plastic gloves were shoved into a garbage sack in the trunk. I debated on the coveralls, and finally folded them on top of the garbage sack. I might be able to wear them one more time. Dolph called out,
You be careful tonight, Anita. Wouldn't want you picking up anything.
I glared back at him. The rest of the men waved at me and called in unison. We love you. Give me a break. One called,
If I'd known you liked to see naked men, we could have worked something out.
The stuff you got, Zebrowski, I don't want to see. Laughter, and someone grabbed him around the neck.
She got you, man. Give it up. She gets you every time.
I got into my car to the sound of masculine laughter, and one offered to be my love slave. It was probably Zebrowski.
Chapter 6 I arrived back at Guilty Pleasures a little after midnight. Jean-Claude was standing at the bottom of the steps. He was leaning against the wall, utterly still. If he was breathing, I couldn't see it. The wind blew the lace on his shirt. A lock of black hair trailed across the smooth paleness of his cheek.
You smell of other people's blood, ma petite.
I smiled at him sweetly. It was no one you knew. His voice when it came was low and dark, full of a quiet rage. It slithered across my skin like a cold wind.
Have you been killing vampires, my little animator?
No. I whispered it, my voice suddenly hoarse. I had never heard his voice like that.
They call you the executioner, did you know that?
Yes. He had done nothing to threaten me, yet nothing at that moment would have forced me to pass him. They might as well have barred the door.
How many kills do you have to your credit?
I didn't like this conversation. It wasn't going to end anywhere I wanted to be. I knew one master vampire who could smell lies. I didn't understand Jean-Claude's mood, but I wasn't about to lie to him. 14.
And you call us murderers?
I just stared at him, not sure what he wanted me to say. Buzz the vampire came down the steps. He stared from Jean-Claude to me, then took up his post by the door, huge arms crossed over his chest. Jean-Claude asked,
Did you have a nice break?
Yes. Thank you, master. The master vampire smiled.
I've told you before, Buzz. Don't call me master.
Yes, Jean-Claude.
The vampire gave his wondrous, nearly touchable laugh.
Come, Anita. Let us go inside where it is warmer.
It was over 80 degrees on the sidewalk. I didn't know what in the world he was talking about. I didn't know what we'd been talking about for the last few minutes. Jean-Claude walked up the steps. I watched him disappear inside. I stood staring at the door, not wanting to go inside. Something was wrong, and I didn't know what.
You going inside?
Buzz asked. I don't suppose you'd go inside and ask Monica and the red-haired woman she's with to come outside. He smiled, flashing fang. It's the mark of the new dead that they flash their fangs around. They like the shock effect. Can't leave my post. I just had a break. Thought you'd say something like that. He grinned at me. I went into the twilight dark of the club. The holy item check girl was waiting for me at the door. I gave her my cross. She gave me a check stub. It wasn't a fair trade. Jean-Claude was nowhere in sight. Catherine was on the stage. She was standing motionless, eyes wide. Her face had that open, fragile look that faces get when they sleep, like a child's face. Her long, copper-colored hair glistened in the lights. I knew a deep trance when I saw it.
Catherine.
I breathed her name and ran towards her. Monica was sitting at our table watching me come. There was an awful, knowing smile on her face. I was almost to the stage when a vampire appeared behind Catherine. He didn't walk out from behind the curtain, he just bloody appeared behind her. For the first time, I understood what humans must see. Magic. The vampire stared at me. His hair was golden silk, his skin ivory, eyes like drowning pools. I closed my eyes and shook my head. This couldn't be happening. No one was that beautiful. His voice was almost ordinary after the face, but it was a command. Call her. I opened my eyes to find the audience staring at me. I glanced at Catherine's blank face and knew what would happen, but like any ignorant client, I had to try. Catherine? Catherine, can you hear me? She never moved. Only the faintest of movements showed her breathing. She was alive, but for how long? The vampire had gotten to her. Deep trance. That meant he could call her any time, anywhere, and she would come. From this moment on, her life belonged to him, whenever he wanted it. Catherine, please. There was nothing I could do. The damage was done. Damn it, I should never have left her here. Never. The vampire touched her shoulder. She blinked and stared around, surprised, scared. She gave a nervous laugh. What happened? The vampire raised her hand to his lips.
You are now under my power, my lovely one.
She laughed again, not understanding that he had told her the absolute truth. He led her to the edge of the stage, and two waiters helped her back to her seat.
I feel fuzzy, she said.
Monica patted her hand.
You were great.
What did I do?
I'll tell you later. The show's not over yet.
She stared at me when she said the last. I already knew I was in trouble. The vampire on the stage was staring at me. It was like weight against my skin. His will, force, personality, whatever it was, beat against me. I could feel it like a pulsing wind. The skin on my arms crawled with it.
I am Aubrey, the vampire said. Give me your name.
My mouth was suddenly dry. But my name was not important. He could have that. Anita.
Anita? How pretty.
My knees sort of buckled and spilled me into a chair. Monica was staring at me, eyes enormous and eager.
Come, Anita. Join me on the stage.
His voice wasn't as good as Jean-Claude's, it just wasn't. There was no texture to it, but the mind behind the voice was like nothing I had ever felt. It was ancient, terribly ancient. The force of his mind made my bones ache.
Come.
I kept shaking my head over and over. It was all I could do. No words, no real thoughts, but I knew I could not get out of this chair. If I came to him now, he would have power over me just as he did Catherine. Sweat soaked through the back of my blouse.
Come to me now.
I was standing, and I didn't remember doing it. Dear God, help me. No! I dug my fingernails into the palm of my hand. I tore my own skin and welcomed the pain. I could breathe again. His mind receded like the ocean pulling back. I felt lightheaded, empty. I slumped against the table. One of the vampire waiters was at my side.
Don't fight him. He gets angry if you fight him.
I pushed him away.
If I don't fight him, he'll own me.
The waiter looked almost human, one of the new dead. There was a look on his face. It was fear. I called to the thing on the stage. I'll come to the stage if you don't force me. Monica gasped. I ignored her. Nothing mattered but getting through the next few moments.
Then by all means, come, the vampire said.
I stood away from the table and found I could stand without falling. Point for me. I could even walk. 2 points for me. I stared at the hard, polished floor. If I concentrated just on walking, I would be all right. The first step of the stage came into view. I glanced up. Aubrey was standing in the center of the stage. He wasn't trying to call me. He stood perfectly still. It was like he wasn't there at all.
He was a terrible nothingness. I could feel his stillness like a pulse in my head. I think he could have stood in plain sight, and unless he wanted me to, I would never have seen him.
Come.
Not a voice, but a sound inside my head.
Come to me.
I tried to move back and couldn't. My pulse thundered into my throat. I couldn't breathe. I was choking. I stood with the force of his mind.